Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Mainstream Drive. You know, that's where I want to be. Mainstream Drive in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm informed by our engineer of the day, Scott Smith. We're sitting right on top of Nashville's trash from the 1970s. So I feel in touch with country music history, strangely enough. And if you have an iPhone, ladies and gentlemen, do the world a favor and get the free Wall Street Journal application so you can read the Wall Street Journal on your iPhone for free. Not because necessarily it's a great newspaper or I think you'll be better informed, but because it'll tick off Rupert Murdoch. The Columbia Journalism Review reports he's unhappy that the Wall Street Journal is giving its news away on the iPhone. The reason that it's happening isn't because the paper is experimenting with ad-supported content on phones. It's because the paper can't figure out yet how to charge for content on the phone. The technological platform to do so isn't up to speed yet, says an anonymous Dow Jones employee. And according to the Columbia Journalism Review, Rupert Murdoch himself said he was displeased that his company's valuable content is being given away free on the iPhone and the BlackBerry. And his displeasure has been made clear more than once to those responsible for mobile. They say they'll have it straightened out and be charging people by the fall. So please, please, please get it now for free and use it a lot. Just as a favor to me. What's happening in the new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen? You know, the spotlight is kind of, we can only pay attention to one thing at a time, if that. How's Bo? And so we're not really paying a lot of attention to Iraq, so you may have missed this. An independent federal panel on religious freedom has added two new countries to its list of countries of particular concern with regard to religious freedom. Nigeria. I'd put them on any list just because of the scams. Nigeria and Iraq. Thank you very much. It was worth every penny. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom released its new report, sends recommendations to the President, Secretary of State, and Congress, and you know what they do with it. Commissioners had already announced in December, I missed this, that Iraq is now among its countries of particular concern, which are those designated as having systemic or ongoing violations of religious freedom. But, you know, we own it. It is a time when perhaps there are glimmers of hope in the current cliche regarding the economic downturn, and yet there are clear indications of what a massive downturn it is. One of them is from the New York Times this week, which reports that the business of spin, PR, is in a downward spiral. One large publicity and advertising company, WPP Group, said its PR revenues were down 6% in the first quarter. Omnicom, it sounds like a movie made-up name, but it's real. They own a lot of PR firms, reported a 10% drop at PR revenue in PR revenue, and the PR firms in these companies fared significantly worse than the advertising firms. So companies continue to advertise, but the PR, maybe not. On the other hand, it became known this week that the United States Army Corps of Engineers are paying more than $1 million a year to hire an outside contractor to handle PR for them. You know, the original boast of the outside contractor, OPP, was that they were doing it to kind of tart up the Army Corps' image, you know, because there had been so much negative press since their levees failed in New Orleans. This is specifically in New Orleans, ladies and gentlemen. $1 million a year just to tart up the Army Corps engineers' image in a city that they drowned. And there were some words of explanation from an Army Corps spokesman who apparently can't be trusted to handle the rest of the duties. You know, like they have to hire somebody else to say no comment now. But then here is evidence that the PR firm is at work. Dateline New Orleans. Less than a month from the start of hurricane season, the Army Corps of Engineers said this week that, for right now, Southeast Louisiana has the best flood protection in its history. But they said the system is far from finished. Best doesn't mean good. People are better off. We are certainly better off than we were last year, the year before, and certainly prior to Katrina, says Karen Durham Aguilera, who's identified as being with the Army Corps of Engineers, which might mean she's working for the PR firm. The message I want to communicate to you today, see the training right there, is that there is still, the training ignored grammar, there is still significant vulnerabilities throughout the system, says Colonel Alvin Lee of the Corps. We've made significant progress, but we still have quite a ways to go, unquote. We want people to realize, until we finished, people need to pay attention. But the bottom line is, it's not finished, and it's not going to be finished until 2011, says Durham Aguilera, after which I guess we can stop paying attention. All right, well, work well done. And speaking of spin and PR, we are reminded of the new kind of catchphrase in the PR world, which is aspirational. We need to be more aspirational in our locutions. Most recently, a memo surfaced to environmental groups from a PR wizard or guru or woo-woo, saying, well, the problem in discussing global warming is people don't, you know, global warming's a turnoff to the focus groups. Talk about climate change and don't use all this scientific mumbo-jumbo. Talk in aspirational language about, you know, better lives for our families, i.e., talk the same content-free claptrap that the other side uses. Okay, then. As you know, I'm on this tour. If you don't know, unwigged.com, a couple more weeks to go. And during this week, we were in St. Petersburg, Florida. And it was there that I saw probably the best example of reverse aspirational language that I've seen so far, or at least reverse aspirational naming. In the middle of sun-kissed, water-blessed St. Petersburg, Florida, there sat a beverage emporium called Detroit Liquors. Hello, welcome to the show. from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm going to be standing on the stage of the Ryman Auditorium tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not just sitting here on the 70s trash pile. I'm in touch with real... This is Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now...
He's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector. He peeks at no stoops. He's an inspector general. Oh, yeah.
News from the inspectors general. We haven't checked in with these guys lately, and it's good stuff. Contractors, one of the nation's major nuclear weapons complexes, repeatedly used substandard construction materials and components that could have caused a major radioactive spill, according to the Energy Department's Inspector General. Who do these people think they are, the Army Corps of Engineers? One of the materials used at the Savannah River site on the South Carolina-Georgia border failed to meet federal safety standards and, quote, could have resulted in a spill of up to 15,000 gallons of high-level radioactive waste, according to the report. A five-month investigation also found the contractors bought 9,500 tons of substandard steel reinforcing bars for the Savannah River site. The faulty steel was discovered, how do you think, after a piece of it broke during the construction of a facility to convert spent nuclear weapons-grade plutonium and uranium into mixed oxide fuel for civilian reactors. You know, like the Iranians do. Replacing 14 tons of substandard steel that had already been installed cost $680,000 and delayed the completion of the facility. Among the other questionable components the probe found were piping, steel plates, an unusable $12 million glove box used to handle radioactive materials, furnace module doors, and defective robots that are used to avoid human exposure to radiological and chemical materials. The IG said the contractors and subcontractors that build and supply and install equipment at Savannah River ignored safety regulations developed by the American Society of Mechanical Engineers, or ASME. Well, don't ask them. ASME. We identified multiple instances in which critical components did not meet required quality and safety standards. Instances of hiring Savannah River site subcontractors who sold standard commercial materials instead of military-grade components. One commercial subcontractor sold goods through retail catalogs. It said, the Inspector General's report, that the Energy Department failed to supervise these contractors adequately and to demand that they meet established safety standards. It's just a nuclear plant. What's the deal? It produced tritium, plutonium-239, and other materials used to make nuclear weapons up till 1991. Maybe they built a site on top of that, like the site here on top of this trash. Scientists and technicians at Savannah River still replenish tritium that's needed to maintain our existing nuclear weapons. And many employees at the plant are engaged in a huge environmental cleanup effort to alleviate the effects of decades of toxic nuclear waste production. I hope that's going well. I don't think they need rebar for that. The FBI's terrorist watch list is riddled with inaccuracies, including 24,000 people who should not be banned from flying or entering the country, and omissions of a few dozen individuals who are suspected of terrorism, according to the Department of Justice's Inspector General. This supports what a number of Muslims told the Detroit News over the past 5 years. They're continually stopped at border crossings or Detroit Metropolitan Airport based on the list, detained and questioned, sometimes for hours, and ultimately released. Assistant Director of the FBI said the agency has already addressed all 16 recommendations made by the Inspector General, including improving accuracy and increasing training. What else really is there? The accuracy and the training and the thing. The FBI's lapses, however, create a risk to national security, according to Justice Department Inspector General Glenn Fine. And keeping people on the list improperly can lead to unnecessary delays for travelers at airports, along highways, and elsewhere. Where would the elsewhere be? People get stopped. Let's look into that elsewhere later on. Another inspector general. Military clinics and field hospitals in Iraq and Afghanistan have supplied more than $1 million a month in health care services, paid for by you and me, to civilian contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan during the past 2 years without seeking reimbursement from their employers, as required by law, according to the Defense Department's Inspector General. who noted that all costs associated with both emergency and primary medical care are reimbursable to the government and are the responsibility of the contractor personnel, their employer, or their health insurance provider. Yet the study found Army, Navy, and Air Force clinics and hospitals were not billing contractors because there was no unified system for doing so. Moreover, more than half the contracts were vague about who pays for the medical treatment of employees, although the law is clear on this point, says the AG. No unified system for billing. You might think about that. But, you know, we're so busy during a war. Not really time to think about billing, is there, really? The Obama administration, on the pattern of Iraq, will establish an office of the Special Inspector General in Pakistan in order to ensure transparency in spending. You may remember the Iraq Inspector General sort of pinpointed all the, $30 billion wasted? Well, not wasted, spent for no discernible effect, to no discernible effect, by us in Iraq. So look for something similar from Pakistan. A report by a federal watchdog says the nation's busiest air traffic control facility relies heavily on inexperienced trainees. There's that damn training again. The Department of Transportation's Inspector General expressed concern about air traffic controller staffing levels in Southern and Northern California radar facilities that handle planes approaching and leaving California airports, as well as, you know, the control tower at Los Angeles International. The report says more than 40% of the controllers at the nation's busiest radar facility in Southern California are trainees. Assume the brace position, won't you, ladies and gentlemen? Controllers' workload at the facility, according to the report, has increased 19% since 1997 as well. So they're not just trainees. They're very busy trainees. And in a highly unusual reversal. Now, let me backtrack and get you up to speed on this story. The New York Times reported last fall that so-called military analysts, whom the networks employed during the run-up to and the early days of the Iraq War, when we were paying attention to Iraq, these military analysts were also recently retired from the military, of course, hence their expertise, and they were also, in many cases, on the boards of military contractors who profited from military expenditures in places like, Iraq. They were also summoned each week, or more frequently, to the Pentagon for what the Times described as spin sessions to set out a line that they might want to peddle on their cable appearances. Then the Defense Department's Inspector General issued a report in January saying, no, it was cool. It was all fine. Now, this week, in a highly unusual reversal, the Defense Department's Inspector General has withdrawn the January report that exonerated that Pentagon PR program. Donald Horstman, the Pentagon's Deputy Inspector General for Oversight, said in a memorandum this week that that report in January, the one that exonerated the PR program, was so riddled with flaws and inaccuracies that none of its conclusions could be relied upon. In addition to repudiating its own report, the Inspector General's office took the additional step of removing the report from its website and closing down the entire Internet, just in case. The Inspector General was inspecting that program in response to the Times stories. The report has been the subject of controversy, with some in Congress calling it a whitewash marred by obvious factual errors. The report had erroneously listed many military analysts as having no ties whatsoever to defense contractors. According to Horstman's memorandum, the Inspector General's office became aware of inaccuracies in the report shortly after it was published. Timing, boys, timing. And soon began an independent internal review. The internal review concluded that the report did not meet accepted quality standards and relied on a body of testimonial evidence that was insufficient or inconclusive. Well, it's good enough to convict the guy at Gitmo. The report found that the former Pentagon officials who devised and managed the program refused to speak with the Inspector General's investigators. It also found the report's methodology was so flawed it would not reasonably yield evidence to address the issue of whether analysts did use their special access at the Pentagon to gain competitive advantage. This evidence is all good at Gitmo, I'm telling you. The Inspector General's office declined to say whether any officials were disciplined for the flawed report. Well, why would you expect accountability? It's the Pentagon. Horstman's memoranda said no additional investigative work would be done to reissue the report because the PR program has been terminated and the senior officials who oversaw it have left the Pentagon. And besides, they're changing the Pentagon to a parallelogram. News from the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast, as is the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Headline Clovis, New Mexico. Clovis Mayor Gloria Brumfield says she didn't know it was inappropriate to ask city officials to forward an email invitation to a fundraiser she's holding for a Democratic Lieutenant Governor's run for governor. Brumfield apologized and said it won't happen again. Deadline Montgomery, Alabama. A state representative from North Alabama has apologized for using a vulgar four-letter word in an email he sent from his official state account. Democratic Representative Ron Grantlin sent the email to Harold Sorensen in response to a message Sorensen sent to all House members. Sorensen asked them to support a resolution that backs sovereignty for the state of Alabama. Hey, you know, the secession thing is catching on. The message back from Gradlin included a crude phrase with the four-letter word. He has apologized. From the Independent newspaper in London, in an article in our print edition, Britain's Least Wanted, that was about the list of people the British government had said are not admissible to Britain, including Michael Savage, under his real name, Michael Ira Wiener, the talk show guy. Anyway, back to the apology. Britain's Least Wanted. By mistake, The Independent published a picture of D'Al-Bhouti instead of a picture of Safwat Hijazi, televangelist. Dr. Al-Bhouti is a reputable Syrian Muslim scholar and, of course, would not appear on a banned list. We apologize to Dr. Al-Bhouti for our error. Manny Ramirez suspended 50 games for violating Major League Baseball's drug policy by taking a substance normally prescribed for women, but which helps steroid users resume their testosterone production. He has now apologized to Los Angeles fans and to his team. L.A. is a special place to me. And $45 million special. And I know everybody is disappointed, so am I. He's disappointed in himself, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry, he says, about this whole situation.
Manny would. The section of seats in left field may also be suspended. I think it already has been. The promotion was taken off the team's website shortly after the penalty was announced.
It's like the Pentagon's running the Dodgers. Britain's largest clothing retailer, Marks & Spencer, has backed down on its policy of a $3 surcharge for brassieres that are size DD or larger in the face of a growing consumer revolt. We always try to do the right thing by our customers, and we thought we had, but it's clear we got it wrong this time, M&S Chairman Stuart Rose said. From Saturday, no matter whether it's large or small bras you need, the price will be the same. In eye-catching full-page newspaper advertisements, the company apologized and offered a 25% price reduction in all bras of all sizes for the next 2 weeks. Deadline Central Florida, home of Detroit Liquor. The president of KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, don't call it that, admits a promotion that promised free chicken came up short. Part of a giveaway on the Oprah Winfrey Show, customers crowded into KFC restaurants in Central Florida and all over the country looking for the free meal. Some stores ran out of chicken. Others had lines so long people had to wait more than an hour for their food. What recession? Friday morning, the president of the company apologized for the problems. The company promised that everyone will eventually get their free chicken. I hope it's in the fridge till then. Dateline Tuscaloosa, Alabama. The University of Alabama chapter of Kappa Alpha Fraternity has apologized for having its Old South Parade pause in front of an event hosted by historically black sorority. Alumni of Apa Kappa Alpha sorority were on campus attending events celebrating the chapter's 35th anniversary when the parade paused. Fraternity officials say an investigation determined that the flatbed trucks carrying the members who were wearing Confederate Army jackets and hats stopped for a very short period of time to pick up sorority members in period dress from another house nearby. Losing kind, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline Novi, Michigan. A married Oakland County official who police say was caught having sex with another woman on the sidewalk in the Detroit suburb of Novi has apologized after pleading guilty in the case. I wonder if they have St. Petersburg liquors there. Republican Commissioner Kim Capello pleaded guilty to indecent exposure, carries a 93-day jail sentence. He says in a statement he's embarrassed and ashamed and apologizes for what he calls a mistake. He says his decision to admit responsibility was driven by concern for his family. Police say officers found an unclothed man and woman apparently having sex against the wall. The couple told the police they'd been drinking. That was a mistake, telling them that. British pop soul singer Adele has apologized for remarks she made during her Toronto concert at Massey Hall. Hey, I'm going to be on that stage, too. Let's see what she said. What I said on stage in Toronto at Massey Hall was not meant how it came across, but I completely understand how it was offensive, she said in a statement forwarded by the vice president of publicity for Columbia Records. There's still a Columbia Records? What happened? I sincerely apologize for being so naive and disrespectful. It was not my intention to be hurtful, and I'm very sorry. The 20-year-old singer was telling a story about buying two guitars from a rude pawn shop owner in Toronto before the concert when she added, quote, he wasn't Canadian, he was Jewish, unquote. The comment drew either silence or nervous laughter. Quote, I just meant he wasn't a rude Canadian, she continued before adding, I'm digging myself deeper. Chrysler CEO Bob Nardelli sent a letter to members of the Wisconsin congressional delegation and the governor, apologizing for misleading them on the Kenosha, Wisconsin engine plant. Nardelli said during a conference call last week that Chrysler was considering keeping the plant open. He wrote that he had mistakenly conveyed information about the status of another plant in Trenton, Michigan, in response to a question about the Kenosha facility. Chrysler is closing the Kenosha plant. Please accept my sincere apologies for the confusion, he wrote. We will continue to work with the people of Kenosha to ensure an orderly transition to mass unemployment. The University of Missouri School of Journalism Associate Dean Brian Brooks apologized profusely to faculty members who weren't aware until this week that the school had made a requirement that all incoming freshmen have iPhones or iPod Touch devices. Okay. Don't even want to get into that, except, kids, get the Wall Street Journal app and read it. Operators of a Dateline Ramapo, New York, operators of a yeshiva where a cow was slaughtered in the backyard earlier this week have written a letter apologizing to neighbors for the incident. Neighbors said the letter was hand-delivered Wednesday night. The unfortunate incident that took place on Monday evening on our school property was not within parameters of our school charter or mission purpose, says the letter signed by Rabbi Gershon Bornfreund. Ritual animal slaughter is beyond the scope of elementary school education. You might want to frame that. A rabbi from the yeshiva delivered the apology letter days after a man's wife and three-year-old son looked out of their kitchen window and saw men with knives slaughtering, then decapitating a brown and white spotted cow. And again, that's well beyond the scope of elementary school education. Just keep that in mind. A former Fresno County deputy coroner learns his fate after admitting to stealing from the dead. Joseph Tiger will serve 6 months in jail and 5 years probation. He fought back tears during sentencing. My life has completely ended as of January 22nd. That's when he was taken into custody for stealing from a dead man. My mom always told me, you're only as good as your name, and I've ruined mine, said Joseph Tiger. He had a good name. He said he was sorry for taking an iPhone. There it is again. And a gold ring from George Lobbin, who died of natural causes in March of 2008. The prosecutor told the court Tiger was driven by greed, and the only reason he was sorry was because he got caught. Tiger was inside Lobin's home. Several witnesses heard him exclaim, "How can a guy like this own an iPhone and I can't?" The iPhone was never recovered. As for the ring, Tiger was wearing it when Fresno County sheriffs arrested him. And he had told the judge, Tiger did, that he sold the cell phone to pay for his electric bill. What recession? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
You knock back the schnapps, you talk back to cops, you walk in the room, a conversation stops. I can't take you nowhere. No, I can't take you nowhere. You stagger, you sag, you're half in the bag, one glass of beer and you're a total drag. I can't take you nowhere. No, I can't take you nowhere. By three or four, you mooch plenty more. The check comes around and you are out the door. I can't take you nowhere. No, I can't take you nowhere. I don't wanna watch you fall on your face. Disgusted with your attitude. I can't take you nowhere. No, I can't take you nowhere. You grumble, you groan, you mumble, you moan. You call Honolulu on my telephone. I can't take you nowhere. No, I can't take you nowhere. I hear people say you won't go away. You drop by for breakfast and you stay all day. I can't take you nowhere. No, I can't take you nowhere. That's right. Try not to get uptight, 'cause I can't take you nowhere. 'Cause I don't know a place where you can show your face. And anyway, I'd just like to say, so sad to see you must be on your way. So have a real nice day, but I can't take you nowhere. 'Cause I don't know a place where you can show your face. And anyway, I'd still like to say, so sad to see you must be on your way. What a pity to say, so long.
This is Le Show, and we learn more day by day about what's been happening in the recent past. You may have heard the story about Philip Zelikow, former counselor to Condi Rice and an executive what was his title at the 9/11 Commission? Executive Director, something like that, Staff Director. Anyway, Philip Zelikow had written a memo back when he was working for Condi Rice way back in 2005. This is history. I know. I should be looking forward. But the future sucks. So he wrote a memo, I say, disputing the conclusions of the Bush Justice Department lawyers that torture was legal. Zelikow disclosed, of course, in that same blog post that the White House attempted to collect and destroy all copies of that memo. He now tells Mother Jones, Washington correspondent, he doesn't know for sure who in the White House ordered the suppression of his memo, but he says his supposition at the time was that the office of Vice President Dick Cheney was behind the cover-up. Murray Wass, investigative reporter, writes about the so-called torture memos that were released a couple weeks ago by the Obama administration. Investigators have reviewed the emails traded between the drafters of those memos, J. Bybee, John Woo, and another guy, as they drafted those controversial legal opinions. In some instances, the drafts changed progressively over time to afford those who wanted to engage in aggressive interrogation techniques additional legal cover, according to people who have read the draft report from the Justice Department, which is still not yet out, the report from the Office of Professional Responsibility, which is going to be coming out, and has been rumored not to recommend prosecution for Bybee, you, and I think Stephen Bradbury is the other one. One source indicated at least two of the earlier drafts were equivocal and nuanced, but noted over time they became more advocative of the views of then Vice President Dick Cheney, that aggressive interrogation techniques were necessary to prevent new terror attacks. Another clue? The Washington Post reports this week former Bush administration officials have launched a behind-the-scenes campaign to urge Justice Department leaders to soften that not-yet-released ethics report, according to two sources who insist on anonymity because, you know, the knees, ladies and gentlemen. It could not be determined how many former officials had reached out to people in the Obama Justice Department. The effort began in recent weeks. So we don't know who's part of that effort, but we have some clues. And for more information, we might have to go, you know, below ground, where the trash is buried.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential.
I admit it. At times I'm a sentimental kind of sap. The idea of the little guys, the Scooter Libbys, the John Hughes, taking all the hits from folks who think endangering their country is a fun way to spend an afternoon. That idea makes my blood boil worse than an overheating pacemaker episode. It's the job of the big guys to speak up for them before all their service to the country becomes ground up like so much Democrat roadkill. Say what you will about George Tenet, and I personally think his failure to keep his agency from leaking against then-President Bush was borderline treason. But he's standing up for his people in this so-called torture, so-called debate. If I did any less for my people, I'd feel shabbier than Greyhound bus upholstery. Also, like I say, I'm a sentimental kind of cuss. And I cherish the idea of seeing the cherry blossoms each springtime without the intervening distraction of prison bars. So, while my one-time constituent-in-chief busies himself with nothing more strenuous than choosing the spittoons for his library, I've decided to do the heaviest lifting since FDR married Eleanor and initiate Operation It's Not Torture and It Works. On the one hand, there's been the work the public sees, the Face the Nations, the Fox Newses, the phone calls to Rush Limbaugh. Those dog and pony spectacles are torture, at least for me. So I hope they work. Far more up my alley is the work I'm doing on the dark side. The encounters that happen when they shut off the lights, power down the cameras, roll up the backdrop, put the lavalier microphones back in their protective pouches. In short, the meeting's so private they don't even show up on my Secret Service logs. Of course, since we kept our entire visitor roster for 8 years off those logs, that's kind of chopsticks to this Clyburn. The Justice Department was about to stop sitting on a report from their ethics cops. Now, asking any lawyer about ethics is like asking a starlet directions to the art museum. The initial attraction of the idea isn't worth the eventual aggravation. This report could render my whole interrogation technique enhancement team unemployable. So, I took the stealth limo downtown for a little visit to the new Attorney General, Mr. Holder, just to deliver a friendly reminder about the power of the former incumbency. Thursday, 3:17 p.m.
Well, Mr. Vice President, so good of you to insist on stopping by.
Mr. Attorney General, two things. First, I'm pleased you made time to see me. And two, let's cut the crap.
Well, frankly, I thought a little bit more crap might be appropriate, but all right. What's on your mind?
Look, you've got these so-called professional responsibility people preparing to smear some very dedicated public servants whose so-called crime was nothing more than realizing just how flexible the Geneva Conventions really are. At a time when we may need the ability to detain people for indefinite periods of time, you're threatening to have a chilling effect on the operation of those particular coolers.
I see where this is going.
Correction. It's already gotten there.
Fine. Well, I'll tell you this, Mr. Vice President.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in the business of reaching down into the bureaucracy and influencing professional decisions. Frankly, I think that's something that previous administration might well have been advised to do less of.
Here's something I think you might be well advised to do. Get yourself a new vase. This one just broke.
Don't you think this kind of behavior is just a tad juvenile?
Mr. Holder, the only time I play games is when I testify before the so-called Congress. One of the little things I did during my time in the vice presidency was to sprinkle certain very avid proponents of my particular political philosophy throughout the middle levels of government. Career positions are still there. You could call them sleeper cells if you wanted to be crass enough to quote our terrorist friends. These folks have the power, among other things, to wreak havoc with an agency's information systems. Much more than that report could disappear in a nanosecond. Hate for you to have to spend most of your first year cleaning up that kind of mess. Wouldn't you?
Wouldn't I hate to?
That's right.
Actually, you can ask my wife. I do a lot of the cleaning up around the house. Strangely, it relaxes me.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, that opinion is being subjected to a stringent professional process at the moment. I think that's all that any of us should really desire.
I understand that, Mr. Attorney General.
Good.
I understand one thing more. In the opinion of people who care about this country's safety, that process needs to be a little less professional and a lot more stringent. Otherwise, I might have to send my associate David Addington down here to deal with that pesky matching lamp.
You're playing a pretty tough hand, Mr. Cheney.
I should, Mr. Holder. I dealt the cards. Look, no decisions needed today. Just give my people a call when Uncle Sam is ready to say uncle.
Well, I will say this. That report could use a little more fine-tooth vetting.
Of course it could. Any report can. Thanks for your time, Mr. Attorney General, and don't bother showing me out.
No?
No, sir. I wasn't ever here. All in all, not the most unsatisfying part of my day. After all, my next project was calling into Michael Savage. End a partial diary for early May 2009. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney, Confidential. Sky, sad though he's
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
I think his tremolo is getting worse. Vibrato, sorry. Satellite images show that icebergs have begun to calve from the northern front of the Wilkins Ice Shelf, indicating that the huge shelf has become unstable. This follows the collapse several weeks ago of the ice bridge that had previously linked the Antarctic mainland to an island. The ice bridge, which effectively formed a barrier pinning back the northern ice front of the central ice shelf, collapsed early April. As a consequence, the rifts, which had already featured along the northern ice front, widened and new cracks formed as the ice ingested in the days that followed. Late April, the satellite data showed that the first icebergs had started to break away from the fragile ice shelf. A very rough estimate says about 700 square kilometers of ice had been lost from the ice shelf. It's expected this charge of ice will continue for some weeks. The icebergs are calving as a result of fracture zones that have formed over the last 15 years and which turned Wilkins into a fragile and vulnerable ice shelf. The retreat of the Wilkins ice shelf is the latest and largest of its kind. Eight separate ice shelves along the Antarctic Peninsula have shown signs of retreat over the past few decades. There is little doubt, says David Vaughan from the British Antarctic Survey, that these changes are a result of atmospheric warming on the Antarctic Peninsula, which has been the most rapid in the Southern Hemisphere. It's still unclear how the situation will evolve. Well, it's unclear how everything will evolve. That's why it's evolution. From Science Daily, biofuels such as ethanol offer an alternative to petroleum for powering our cars. But growing energy crops to produce the biofuels can compete with food crops for farmland. Hey, we wanted to eat that corn. No, you didn't. And clearing forests to expand farmland will aggravate the climate change problem, you see. How can we maximize our miles per acre from biomass? Researchers writing in the online edition of the journal Science say the best bet is to convert the biomass into electricity rather than ethanol. Clearly, this research was not funded by Archer Daniels Midland. They calculate that compared to ethanol used for car engines, bioelectricity used for battery-powered vehicles would deliver an average of 80% more miles of transportation per acre of crops, while providing double the greenhouse gas offsets to mitigate climate change. It's a relatively obvious question once you ask it, but nobody had really asked it before, says study co-author Chris Field of Carnegie Institution. The kinds of motivations that have driven people to think about developing ethanol as a vehicle fuel have been somewhat different, here's delicacy of phrasing, from those that have been motivating people to think about battery electric vehicles, but the overlap is in the area of maximizing efficiency and minimizing adverse effects on climate. The researchers performed a life cycle analysis of both bioelectricity and ethanol technology, taking into account not only the energy produced by each technology, but also the energy consumed in producing the vehicles and fuels. Bioelectricity was the clear winner in the transportation miles per acre comparison, regardless of whether the energy was produced from corn or from switchgrass. Wasn't that George Bush's favorite biomass for ethanol product? Switchgrass. We got to switch to switchgrass. The internal combustion engine just isn't very efficient, especially when compared with electric vehicles, says one of the authors. Even the best ethanol-producing technologies with hybrid vehicles aren't enough to overcome this. The researchers also found that bioelectricity and ethanol differed in their potential impact on climate change. Some approaches to bioenergy can make climate change worse. Other limited approaches can help fight climate change. For these beneficial approaches, we could do more to fight climate change by making electricity rather than by making ethanol. The energy from an acre of switchgrass used to power an electric vehicle would prevent or offset the release of up to 10 tons of CO2 per acre relative to a similar-sized gasoline-powered car. This offset averages more than 100% for the bioelectricity than for the ethanol. The researchers, though, caution that the issues facing society in choosing an energy strategy are complex, because they might want some funding from Archer Daniel Midland, I guess. But we also need to compare these options for other issues like water consumption, air pollution, and economic costs, says the author. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, it is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, that's going to pave the landfill on this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the UFSend 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network. Think of it. Up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.45 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations on your computer whenever you want it, live or archive, harryshearer.com. And KCRW.com, available on your smartphone from Stitcher.com for free. I bet that ticks Rupert Murdoch off. Available as a free download from to members from www.audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast from KCRW.com. And it'd be just like figuring out some way to monetize all this free stuff. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast, along with the playlist of the music heard here on, just some of the things you'll find at the constantly evolving harryshearer.com. We don't know how it's going to come out. It's evolving. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks, and to Scott Smith at WPLN Nashville for helping to make today's show possible. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. If you're listening on the internet in the Nashville area, come down and see us at the Ryman Auditorium tonight. I don't know how that could be possible, but, it's just the kids today with the Googles and the Twitters and the thing. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and comes to you through the facilities of KCRW, Santa Monica. Santa Monica?
Hi, everybody. This is Tom Jones, Santa Monica, home of the homeless.
So long from Nashville. Hey, after the show, let's meet at Detroit Liquor. What do you say?